This talk was given by Danica Shoan Ankeli at Zen Mountain Monastery. Shoan is a senior monastic in the Mountains and Rivers Order. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you'd like to make a donation or find out more about our retreats and residency programs, visit our website at zmm.org. Thanks for listening.
Hello. So, picture this. It's a, calligraphy, but Western-style calligraphy, so written in English, but with a brush, in ink, loose, but very vital and beautiful. And it's a calligraphy on a piece of rice paper about this big. And the first line in a bold red ink with letters maybe half the size of my hand going across says, "The red tulips are alive." And then just underneath that, slightly overlapping in bold black ink, same hand, "The red tulips are dead." And then underneath that, small brush, very fine, black ink, all caps, "Now you know everything." This is a calligraphy that my dad showed me the other day, and it's by Barbara Bash, and he said that she had heard those words in a talk, a Dharma talk, but he couldn't remember the teacher who had given the talk, and they had captivated her, and so she had created that piece. And that was coming up for me strongly this week, and when Shugen Roshi gave his talk on Wednesday, and he quoted the capping verse to the koan, Matsu's mind is Buddha. It's Daito Roshi's capping verse, and one of the lines is, "The truth fills the universe. Nothing is hidden." And that nothing is hidden is, not a unique teaching to Daito Roshi by any means, but I remember sitting in the Zendo and hearing him say that, you know, at different times and in different ways, and thinking, like, so what is going on? Because I can't see it. Nothing is hidden. Now you know everything. And this, of course, pervades Zen teachings. We talk about the truth being revealed in a single ordinary moment, that impermanence, the reality of all things, is present right before our very eyes, that to see one thing clearly is to see into the nature of all things, that Buddha is here now, it's already revealed, it's our mind. Mind is Buddha. And this is so integral to how we actually practice and train, because we come together here in Sesshin, and as has been pointed out before, we're not doing anything so extraordinary. The schedule might stretch us a bit, but really we're, you know, having meals, doing the dishes, mowing the lawn, cleaning the bathrooms, etc. And that's our point of entry, that the entry's everywhere. So then how do we train the mind? What do we need to do? How does the truth that's there already, how do we see into it? How do we actually train in manifesting Buddha? Nagarjuna said, "Those who are caught in the net of afflictions are those who are called beings. Those who are free from the net of afflictions are those who are called Buddha." So Buddha is being freed from the net of afflictions. And the crazy, incredible, wild thing is that our mind is the net of afflictions, and our mind is Buddha. And so we have to use our mind to set ourselves free from the prison that we've created with our mind. This is what we're training in. So I wanted to look at a little, meaning short, teaching that's been really helpful to me in terms of finding my way through how to like work with my mind in a fresh way. Because of course I've been doing this for a while, but it's always nice to get a refresher. And this teaching is from the Mahamudra tradition, which is from the a meditation-based tradition from the Tibetan Buddhist schools. And it traces its roots back to Yogacara and Tathagata Garba teachings, which so does Zen. So it's very like, it's like what I've been finding is kind of no contradiction whatsoever, and like a lot of like just like it's like at a slight slant, so I can like hear something that I've heard before in a fresh way. And the lineage of Mahamudra contains names that may be familiar to us, like Naropa and Milarepa and Gampopa. And Mahamudra itself means great Mahamudra seal, and comes from the essential teaching that all phenomena are imprinted with the seal that of wisdom and emptiness, the non-dual nature of wisdom and emptiness. So Prajna Paramita, which we return to again and again and again. It's right there, our extended family. Mahamudra uses meditation, seated meditation, to train the mind, to see into the mind, which is what we do in Zen also. And interestingly, in Mahamudra literature, there's a lot of speaking actually about non-meditation. So the practice is non-meditation. And perhaps this also sounds familiar. You know, Daida Roshi on the Zen training weekend used to start out saying Zazen is not meditation. And there's that encounter with Joshu, the great teacher Joju, who one of monastic asked, what is meditation? Zhaozhou said, it's not meditation. It's alive. It's alive. The reason for this non-meditation being so central is that Buddha nature pervades the whole universe, so we don't have to construct anything, we don't have to create anything, we don't have to like effortfully like channel ourselves in a particular way, because we don't make a Buddha. Ordinary mind is the way. Same. So although we're already Buddha, of course, there's Nagarjuna has already pointed out, Buddhas are ones who are free from that net of afflictions. Beings are ones who are caught in that net of afflictions. And in my experience, it feels like the further that I get into practice and working with my own mind, the more subtle that distinction becomes. In the beginning, it's easy to see the mind of afflictions and the net of afflictions. And over time, as the coarser afflictions get worked through and refined a bit, or become so familiar to us that we're readily able to recognize them, then it becomes the subtler states that are hard to see. And so in our meditation practice, we can fall into creating a state of mind or controlling our thoughts, trying to make a Buddha. Subtly. How do we interrupt that or see through it if we're caught? How do we navigate that like kind of terrain? So I was on Hermitage about a month ago. And of course, in Hermitage, you're not working with the teacher, it's just you. And you're, you know, practicing on your own. And so a Hermitage practitioner is permitted to bring perhaps one slender Dharma volume to turn to, which is most generous and wonderful to have. And while I was on my Hermitage, I had this small volume, a meditation manual from the Mahamudra tradition by Dakpo Tashi Namgyal called Clarifying the Natural State. And in it, I found these lines, and they just, I was like, ah, oh, you know, if you're caught, right, in Zazen, and you go in to see the teacher, and oh, you get that relief, like, thank you. Because I couldn't see through it. I was like banging my head against a wall that I didn't even know I was banging my head against a wall. So it was that kind of like, ah. And so it's very simple. These are practice instructions, analogies. Elevate your experience and remain wide open like the sky. Broaden your mindfulness and remain pervasive like the earth. Steady your attention and remain unshakable like a mountain. Brighten your awareness and remain shining like a flame. Clear your thought-free wakefulness and remain lucid like a crystal. So these became my encouraging words. And I wrote them down and I put them on my little altar. And I started to, when I would, you know, take my seat, I would call them to mind. And with each one, I felt like I could drop in and get closer to training in manifesting Buddha. And because I was in the Hermitage hut, those natural elemental teachers were so present and tangible for me. So I really felt that I had the company and body teaching of the sky and the earth and the mountains. So it's the first three of that five that I have worked with the most, and that's what I would like to explore a little bit further. Mind training instruction. So to elevate your experience and remain wide open like the sky, can we take that in and feel that spaciousness, that deep relaxation, no effort, free? To elevate your experience, I think about that as raising up. You know, when I'm constricted or really caught in my self-preoccupation, right, in the net, it's like I'm in like this dank, dark, cramped, claustrophobic, cobweb-ridden basement, you know? Like the prison of just like my conditioned view. Crunchy, contorted, relentless. So what is it to elevate my experience and remain wide open like the sky? To come up for air. Part of what happens for me is I can feel in my body the dissonance. Right? Like, oh, I'm not wide open. Let me like, okay, relax. And so much is helpful about actually seeing our net. We have to see our net. I was thinking about, defensiveness, and like defensiveness is like such a like, boom, like there's your net. And like how like when we're defensive, there's like a crunch in the body and we like tighten up and we're like, you know? And like that personal affront. And I was thinking the other day, the residents will remember this. So first let me go back in time. It's Sunday ago, we did Kyoto's funeral and it's pouring rain. And I was the liturgist, and there's different liturgy for a funeral service, and I was using the same liturgy book and kind of rearranging it, so I had the different chants that we were doing in an unusual order. I had the whole thing set, and we went up the hill, and we did the service at the cemetery, and came back down, and we were putting things away, the monastics were putting things away, and the liturgy book had gotten really wet. And I was like trying to wipe it off with my sleeve, and Yukon was helping me, and he was like, let's take it all out and dry it. So we like were taking all the pages out. We were in the guest room. We had them all out on the bed, and you know, everything, so it's like pages and pages and pages. They're just like all over the place, and we're wiping them off, and it's, you know, time for Hosan, and we have plans in the evening, and so we're kind of bustling about. And we wipe them off pretty good. Okay, it's looking pretty good. We're gonna put them back together. We start putting them back together. And Yukon's like, let me do this for you. I love it when you say that, by the way. Let me do this for you. I wanna do this for you. I'm like, I'll help. No, I've got this. I'm like, okay. And as I'm leaving, I have this feeling in my body as I'm leaving the guest room, like, but I just roll on by. And then we come to, Wednesday morning Hakurasan service, where we do regular morning service in the Zendo, and then we flow right into the Hakurasan altar in the back hallway and do a special service. And there's a tab in the liturgy book for Hakurasan service. And Hokyu, the liturgist, turns to that tab, and there's nothing there. And like meanwhile, like the service just begins, right? Roshi's like bowing, there's bells going, and Hokyu's like, and he gives it to Gokhan, and Gokhan gives it to me. And I'm like, Yukon, I totally stick it to Yukon. So Yukon takes the book, and meanwhile, we like, service is starting. And Yukon's like, you can hear the pages in the background as we like roll into the show Saimyo, and we're going, and we're off at a brisk clip. And I'm like, there's not a lot of time. The liturgy book is a mess. And I hear the pages going. And we get to the end of the second chant, the Jizu Shingon. And Hokyu, you can feel Hokyu's like looking over his shoulder, like, where's the liturgy book? Like, this is a dedication that is less familiar to us because we only do it once a week and only in Ango. So we get to the end, we get to the point of the dedication, and there's a long pause. And Roshi's like, what's going on? And Yukon's like, the book, we can't find the pages. And Hokyu, I can't even really remember like the order of things. And I'm standing there thinking like, this is not my fault. This is not my fault. So we get our way through it. Zuiko, bless her heart, like memorized the dedication, knows it by heart. So she's like feeding it line by line to Hokyu, who's then like repeating it. It was a bit rocky and absurd. But we like kind of get our way through it. And as we're going through it, I'm like, I feel like that defensive constriction in my body. And I'm like, whoa, this is so my fault. Totally, it is my fault. And as soon as I could admit that to myself, I felt, okay. We ended the service. I said, I'm sorry. I feel like that was my fault. Yukon said, me too, my fault too. And the two of us went into the guest room immediately and pulled the book apart and like looked, and there it was sandwiched between the Daihishin Dorani and something else like behind. And while we're in there, just taking care of it, Roshi comes in, and he says, you know, so next time, like, you could say, why don't we do this service tomorrow? We're not ready. Like, no chastising, no, like, punishing, No, like, I can't believe this. That's like the protector spirit service. Now we're doomed. You guys really up. None of that. And we were like, okay, yeah, great. Good idea, good suggestion. We found it. We put it all back together. We went out. We did our bows to Hakura-san and apology. And it was all fine. The point being that opening, you know, we can be grateful to some degree for those moments of constriction, as uncomfortable as they are, if we can actually use them to practice. And if we can see what's happening around that condensation, self-creation, and release it. No self, no one to blame. Elevate your experience and remain wide open like the sky. Broaden your mindfulness and remain pervasive like the earth. To broaden our mindfulness, to remain pervasive. Sesshin is a practice of broadening our mindfulness. We're asked to not just be mindful, you know, at a certain time in the zendo or for a contained form, but to really let our zazen fill the whole of our day, day after day. And that mindfulness, this is a Mahamudra practice instruction. The secret of mindfulness practice is to keep regenerating its power so that you sustain a continuity of mindfulness. Before one episode of mindfulness has lost its power, you need to regenerate it so that continuity is maintained. In other words, we maintain our mindfulness by refueling its power so that the mindfulness of past mental states is transferred to subsequent mental states. I found that very helpful. It's a bit technical, but you know, we talk about how each moment of mind conditions the next. And so that is, in some way, the reason sesshin can be so powerful, is we're like, you know, building our mindfulness. We're building our ki. And so if we think about, like, before I get distracted and lose it, let me, like, refuel my mindfulness and bring it forward. And so practice deepens. The other thing that I like to use the mindfulness, the pervasive, broadening the mindfulness and letting it be pervasive, is as a reminder to really come into my body, to really let my zazen be an embodied practice, to feel into my actual physicality, and especially the things that I may be out of touch with. You know, any constriction or contortion that we have in the body is originating in our mind. So we can find, you know, if our posture is tight or contorted, that is an amazing study to see, like, what's going on? What is that? Can I find my way into openness and relaxation by letting my mindfulness take that in, going there, in a sense? And this is also an excellent teaching on not bypassing, right? To let our mindfulness be pervasive means, like, there's nothing we need to keep at the door. It can all come in. And in fact, we should let our mindfulness go to it, seek it out, find it, pervade, support. I find it's so helpful in zazen. Anytime that I notice I'm trying to avoid something, it's like, whew, okay, go exactly there. Let it in completely. There's a lovely passage from The Way of Tenderness by Zenju Sensei, where she talks about exactly this, exactly how turning toward the thing that we're trying to avoid was a gateway into realization. She writes, "When I turned toward the hurt in the silence, I entered a kind of tenderness that was not sore, not wounded, but rather powerfully present. I sat up straight. The silence had tilled hard ground into soft soil. I sunk deep into the soft ground where the source of life was revealed. Wordless, nameless, without form, completely indescribable. And then, I dare to say it, I was completely tender. I love how she uses the earth sinking into the soft ground where the source of life was revealed when I turned toward the hurt. So we use form to study emptiness. We have to, right? I'm not sure about this, but I'm fairly confident that you can't use emptiness to study emptiness. You have to use form to study emptiness. And that's why when we go into form completely, it reveals itself. Zenju Sensei is coming here to the monastery, by the way. So it's a program that we confirmed kind of late in the scheme of things, and so we're just getting the word out. And she's going to give the Sunday talk here that Sunday. It's the 16th or something like that. So come. There's also the power and the mystery of mindfulness. Like on my hermitage, you know, you come back from hermitage and there's like not a lot to report on. You're like sitting by yourself in a cabin. So people are like, oh, did you see any animals? And like once in a while, someone's like, oh, they saw the bear, you know. That's, you know, usually it's like, ah, turkeys, oh. And this time I was like, actually, you know what I saw that was incredible? And this is like pervasive mindfulness, broad pervasive mindfulness. You know those little orange newts? Yeah. Oh my God, I was on a walk. It's almost the last day of my hermitage, so I'm very settled. And I saw this little newt, this little orange newt in like the brown leaves of the early, early spring forest. And I crouched down to look at it because I have nothing else to do, right? I crouched down to look at it and I just saw it move over the forest floor, like how it would like pick up its little leg and then put it down. And then it would push up. I mean, for a newt, the forest floor is like, you know, there's like rocks and leaves and sticks and logs. It's like there's a lot of terrain to cover. And I got right down in there, and I swear to you, I could like feel its little body moving and then like pulling itself up, and then it would bring its little hind leg up and like go over the thing. And I was just like, whoa. And I thought, oh, this is when you read about people who train in shamanic traditions where they can like inject their consciousness into another being. I was like sort of halfway there, I think. I'm kidding/not kidding. Which, you know, when we say that mind and object are not two, broaden your mindfulness and remain pervasive like the earth. Steady your attention and remain unshakable like a mountain. Sitting there in the hermitage, I would feel those mountains. I could even raise my eyes and look out because the leaves weren't out yet and see the mountains across the way and feel their presence. Earlier today, again, I was looking out to Mount Pleasant, I guess it is, and feeling like, whoa, that steady, unshakable presence, that body teaching, which is, you know, when we're working with a mind that is agitated, it can feel so hard to shake that loose. For me, so many times it's like you're in the cycle. It's like, oh my God, when is this going to end? How do I get me out of here? You know, you're just like, dear, dear, dear. So it's like coming into the body, steady your attention. Just choose one thing. How about your breath? And just steady your attention. Keep it there. The mind will settle. When I, a short while ago, I was at a retreat at KTD, Karma Trayana Dharma Chakra Monastery down the street in Woodstock, for a retreat on Mahamudra as a practice of devotion, led by their abbot Kempo Kartha Rinpoche, who is 96 years old. And I was thinking about that because I was like, if Shugan makes it to 96, that would be like 35 more years of him as abbot. I thought that was kind of great news. People may have different opinions on it, but I thought that was so cool. And then I thought, oh my God, I'll be 81. How amazing would that be? So I was at this retreat and I was in the cafeteria. I was there early and there was a woman who I chatted with a bit, and it turned out she was a Zen practitioner back in the day and used to study with Master Sheng Yen. And she said, oh yes, Zen is a good foundation. but I didn't get into it. I was just like, I'm so glad you feel that way. But one thing that she said that was really interesting, because it was so simple, and I was like, oh my gosh, you're so right. She said, you know, devotion is so important because it's a way of cutting through our conceptual mind. And I was like, oh, of course, like, of course. And Kempo Kartha, in his retreat, he speaks in Tibetan and he has a translator, and he said, devotion is the heart of Mahamudra practice, and that realization of Mahamudra depends on devotion. So I have been really taking that in. This feels like this is my sort of live, juicy working edge these days, is like, oh, like, what does that mean for me in my Zen practice? And, you know, he taught a very particular practice of devotion to the Mahamudra lineage masters, where you, like, bring them to mind, and there's a whole visualization that you do with, like, Gampopa and all of these other teachers in the lineage. And, you know, there was one point, you know, he would speak for a while in Tibetan, and then the translator would translate for a while. And so, you know, you're just like listening. I was just listening to this language that I didn't understand. And there was one point where I couldn't tell, because I'm not familiar with him or his teaching, but I was like, I think he might be getting choked up. He seemed like he got like a little verklempt. And I was like, ooh, what's happening there? And then I heard Gampopa. And I was like, oh. And sure enough, when the translator translated, there was a part where she was talking about like the lineage masters, and I was like, oh my God, I think Kempo Rinpoche was like getting choked up, thinking of like Gampopa and the lineage masters. And I was really touched by that. Like, wow. And so I think about, you know, what is that devotion? How does that manifest? Is the, you know, that steadiness of the mountain, that unshakable quality of the mountain, feels like a devotional presence in some way to me. And that I notice in my own mind, if I can feel that surrender or devotion to just reality, you know, to my life, to like this, it really helps my attention. It kind of, there's a potential there. If we're steadying our attention and you think like, oh, it's so easy to pay attention to what you love, then we might think like, oh, how do I practice generating like love just for like here and now, just as it is? So, these lines, elevate your experience and remain wide open like the sky. Broaden your mindfulness and remain pervasive like the earth. Steady your attention and remain unshakable like a mountain. When we sit down, we can bring forth our own aspiration, our own inquiry, our own deep faith that we can use our mind to see into mind. And that when we see into mind, we see into the nature of all things.
Thanks so much for listening. For meditation supplies such as meditation cushions, incense, malas, liturgical instruments, books, and more, visit the Monastery Store at monasterystore.org. Support for your spiritual practice at home.